the Now What Community Call. This is Lauren Berman Fortgang speaking. We have people calling
Hello.
In.
Yep.
So, yep. Hi, Gregory. Welcome. This
Thank
is Laura
you.
Speaking. We're just going to let people gather for a couple of minutes and we'll get started.
Okay.
We are here to take questions.
Great.
Thank you
for having us.
Sure, thank you. You can mute yourselves by pressing *6 if anyone's going to be taking notes or tapping on their computer, and you can unmute yourself by doing the same thing. It's okay if I can hear you now.
Wait, what is that about *6?
You can mute yourself if you're going to be taking notes or doing anything in the background, and then you can unmute yourself as well to ask a question. If anyone on the line prefers to email in a question while we're talking, you can do so at lbf@intercoach.com. LBF, my initials, at intercoach.com, and I'll occasionally update and see what's going on here. And like I said, we'll just hold one more minute, and then we'll get started. And this will... my goodness. Okay, someone's looking for the dial-in number at the last minute. So anyway, like I was saying, you know, we're just going to let people gather, and this will work kind of like, you know, almost as if it were a radio show call-in hour where you can ask questions.
Okay. I wrote them down.
Well.
Hello?
Okay. Welcome. We still have people joining. And I am sending out the number to somebody who was asking. And this is what happens when your assistant's in Hawaii or in the middle of the ocean or something. I'm like, I don't know. Okay.
This is terrific.
All right. So we may hear people introduce themselves, but I'm going to get started. It's 3 minutes after the hour, and this is being recorded so that you can listen to it again afterwards, or there's some people who register and then listen to it later. So we have a nice bunch of people signed up for tonight. So again, I'm Laura Berman Fortgang. I'm the founder of Now What Coaching. I've been a coach for 25 years, and one of my books, Now What, 90 Days to a New Life Direction, really has become the cornerstone of my coaching. And in 2015, it was re-released in a 10-year anniversary edition with a TED Talk, and that has just been amazing, the amount of email that I get from around the world. So I do these community calls quarterly. I think I keep that promise of doing it quarterly. They're, you know, no charge. I want people who are either working with the book or have the audio book or who are just curious about their career transition to have a place to get their questions answered. You know, I will mention a couple of things that you could do with us further, but I'm not here to do a sales call, you know, where no information is exchanged other than how you can get the next level of information. This is really, you know, we can't do some elongated coaching in this venue, but we can certainly, you know, I can try to share some insights or things for you to look at to move your situation forward. I did get in advance one question, which I'll be sure to honor, for initials KT, if you're on the line. I will get to your question that you emailed in, but let's start with anyone who wants to get started. I'll just ask for a name to go with, and, you know, tell me what you're thinking about. While you're thinking about what you want to talk about, let me just ask first if there are any of our authorized facilitators on the call. Do we have any of our authorized facilitators on the call tonight? I'll take that as a no. And if you're wondering what an authorized facilitator is, every year I do one training only a year for coaches or therapists or school counselors, people who are often in relationship with people who are like, I don't know what to do with my life. So I train people once a year to use this methodology. That's coming up in October. And I do have an offer about that tonight. So that's what an authorized facilitator is. If you're curious about them or becoming one, you can find that on nowwhatcoaching.com. So anyway, here we are. Oh, my goodness. let's take the first question. Who's going to jump in?
I'll jump in.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Gregory.
Hi, Gregory.
And
what's going on?
Well, I attended your event at the Actors Fund.
Okay.
So we met there, and you said that you recognized me or thought you recognized me, but we never figured out where it was.
Oh,
from, so.
Okay. There you go.
Anyway, we're still working on that. I guess one question I have is, I have some sort of, I don't know if I'm calling them transition things necessarily from performing, but they're certainly sidelines, and I've got a couple of different threads that I've been working on that have been actually, you know, working out.
Great.
And I guess my question is if I should be focusing on one of them as opposed to the others, or if I should be just sort of allowing everything to unfold and see which one of these, you know, threads is the most, I don't know, dominant or draws me to it the most.
All right. So let me ask you a couple of questions. But first I'll say to anyone who's listening, the Actors Work Program is a service provided by the Actors Equity Association, which is the Actors Union. And having been an actor myself, I have a sweet spot in my heart for performers and people in the business. So every now and then they ask me to come speak there, and we did that in June. So that's just Gregory and I met. All right, so what is working out? Tell us which sidelines are doing good for you, well for you.
Well, one of them is a personal assistant position.
Uh-huh.
Or a pretty, a big
prominent
person. But he's retired. He's sort of like, you know, twilight years, writing his autobiography, but he had a big career, and he's very much a Luddite, doesn't do tech, so I kind of handle being his public face and responding to emails and handling bookings when they come in, although he's kind of slowing down on traveling. So
what do you like about that?
I'm a one-person operation. I think one thing that I do like is that I'm
autonomy.
It's like the performing career, you just sort of run your own ship, and I like the fact that, you know, I don't mind being there by myself. I don't feel bored or disconnected because, you know, I'm on the phone, I'm online. I know that I function not just as a personal assistant, but also just kind of handling some things for he and his wife, and they appreciate that. So that has been something that I've been doing for a while, and I kind of fell into it, and I took it as something to develop some employment history that was not related to the entertainment
industry.
Tell
me about the other sidelines that are working out.
Okay, so the other one is that I've been doing sort of elder care, which is something that I got very interested in because my mom had Alzheimer's, and I was really kind of, you know, freaked out and flummoxed by the whole situation, and I dealt with some people who, you know, were elder care specialists, and it meant so much to me that it kind of pulled me into that direction as something that I might like to do to alleviate other people's anxiety.
Wow.
And so I have two clients. One of them is living at home. She's a widow, and her background is from showbiz. Her father was a Broadway performer. Her husband was a leading man. And then the other one is a businessman who is dealing with Alzheimer's, but he's still at home. And I'm kind of hanging out with him, playing the piano, talking about music, and playing chess.
Cool. Well, you sound like a patient and organized person. So what's the question really? Are you angsting that you should pick one? Is it like, well, I really don't like this one, but I'll do it because it shows up? You know, why do you have to decide anything right now?
It's not a question of deciding anything right now. It's kind of thinking about, you know, if I should be laying anything for the future because, for example, the personal assistant position, you know, if this gentleman passes away, then, you know, there might be a transition period where I help deal with the estate and things, you know, to do with his, his archives. And likewise, if you're, you know, if you're taking care of elderly people, eventually they're going to pass away. And it's not something that I've really marketed myself. I've sort of fallen into these positions. And so I don't know if I should be thinking, you know, not about necessarily marketing right now, but just what might be the next step if I need to sort of go further with this.
Cool. Well, I'm for the sake of time and
and I
go
that
with
wasn't
my gut.
Terribly long.
No. And I asked you questions. I wanted to hear. And I go with my gut a lot. What occurs to me, what bubbles to the top for me, is that since it's really not about choosing, and right now neither one of them seem to require, that you need any kind of particular training or certification to do either one of them. What occurs to me is that networking is something that you could benefit from making a habit. So by that I mean, you know, you're an assistant to a prominent person. Do you know the assistants of other prominent people? Or, through this person, who have you met? And just really growing your network. You're not necessarily looking for anything right now from anyone, but just, maybe stepping out of your comfort zone a little bit, or participating in activities that surround either one of these kind of jobs, so that you're knowing other people in the field and you're knowing other people who could possibly hire you down the line. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes.
So really, make it, less than I feel like having to decide and say, this is going to be my long term. It's really just making sure that if something did fall away, in terms of, in this case, it could be people actually falling away, that it wouldn't be take a terribly long time to find other opportunities. So when we're someone who nurtures a network, that means, you're just a phone call away from letting people know, hey, I bet you didn't know that, I'm looking again, or whatever the case may be, but that's really hard to do if you don't have a network of people to begin with.
Okay.
So how does that resonate with you?
That makes sense.
Yeah, because, you're enjoying it, you're learning, you're meeting people, and I'd say just put more attention towards building a network. And keep track of it, whether it's... just in contacts in your database, or you have some other way of keeping track. But that's what occurs to me.
Okay.
And there might be agencies, or there might be professional groups. There actually is a professional group for people that are personal assistants. So I don't know if they hold a conference or they hold meetings, but just to know other people.
Great. Okay.
Cool. Well, thank you. Thanks
thank
for being
you.
Here. Hang out. Don't go anywhere. All right. So while the next person's gaining their courage to come on board, I'm gonna share the email that I got. It's a long one, so I'm gonna paraphrase. And I don't know if KT is on the call, but I'll ask in a moment. So I have somebody who, basically, I don't think anyone even really needs all the details, really, or that you need to know. If here's someone who's relatively young, who, because of, 34, so because of, and isn't where they want to be in their life right now, and the main gig is walking around feeling like they're a failure. So how do you get out of a rut if you're feeling like a failure, or you... say you are a failure. So, KT, are you on this call, and do you want to talk? Yes, no? Okay, so we're going to say no. So this is for anyone out there, right? That's why I'm kind of keeping it general. So here's somebody who felt like the most successful they were when they were in getting their bachelor's degree, and yet... didn't pursue their dream of being a journalist, and drank too much, and had some destructive behavior, and finally got into therapy. Now is having a hard time paying off the school debt, and maybe they need further education, and where's that money going to come from? And feeling like they're bored and underpaid, and you know, just this big, this major spiral of just feeling like, you know, what's the point? So, just generally speaking, because I don't even have the person on this call to ask questions of, you know, if depression sets in, it's not usually something that a coach should be working with you on. It's a therapy issue, and so getting the support for depression and feelings of hopelessness is really important. But looking at it from a coaching perspective, I would want to say, you know, when we feel like we're a loser, we start behaving like we're a loser. You know, like it requires a tremendous amount of forgiveness of ourselves. Okay, we didn't finish that. Or okay, we made a mistake with money. Okay, we drank too much, but now we're not. Okay, so we really need to start telling a different story, you know, so instead of a story of failure, a story of, you know, I'm still here. So we can only go up from here. That's a whole different way to look at it. So, and one thing in coaching we will always say is that success breeds success. So what perfectionists or people who are hard on themselves will do is say, well, don't tell me, Laura, to do a bite-sized little step and then celebrate it, because that's not good enough. But if you don't do that, you get to celebrate being a loser, right? Or that you feel like a loser. But when you set yourself up to succeed, that means, okay, I'll use it in some very loose terms. Like today, I woke up and said, I've not been very good about working out for a couple of years now. And I actually woke up today and was like, I'm going to the gym today. I've got to do something to prove to myself that I'm, you know, going to do something. And I went to the gym for an hour, which I think is pretty darn good. But I also know, for someone who used to be such a gym rat, that I got myself into being anorexic in my 20s and major health problems due to overexercise, I know the other side of it. So now in my older self, I'll say, 30 minutes a day. Just like do something that moves your body for 30 minutes a day. And so what I'm showing you is that I lower the standard in order to succeed. If I at my age was like, you have to be working out as hard as you did in your 20s, I'm going to fail. That's setting yourself up to fail. So getting yourself out of a rut, as much as your ego is not going to want you to set teeny-weeny goals, because that seems like a loser thing, it's exactly what you need to do. You need to go, teeny-weeny goal, I'm going for a walk today. Yay, I did it. Right? I'm using, you know, exercise or weight loss, but this is for whatever anybody's putting themselves in a little corner about. And basically, if I keep with the weight loss or exercise thing, there is a, what, $4 billion industry or something around weight loss in this country? We all know how to lose weight. Right? If you guys could talk at me like I do with a live audience, you would say, okay, we know that we have to eat less and exercise more. Everybody knows that. So why do we still have this industry? Because the part that we don't do is keep our promise to ourselves. So the real work is to keep your promise to yourself. So if keeping your promise means making a really, really small promise, then I don't care. Success breeds success. So make little small promises and celebrate each and every one. So that's for KT, who wrote in and, you know, is just judging herself for 10 years of saying she's a failure. But, you know, you're 34. Let's say you live till 84. You still got 50 years to make up for it. So this is just a blip in your life, okay? All right. Mm-hmm. Who's next? What's your transition scenario? What is your question tonight? Anybody?
Hey, Laura. This is Julian. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Julian. Hello.
Hi. I don't know if you remember me. We met at the Riverside Memorial Chapel in April. It was like mid-April.
Yeah.
You gave a talk there, yeah.
Oh, look at it. It's my New York peeps coming out tonight. All right. Fun. Okay.
So at the time, I hadn't started the book, but I did start it on Memorial Day, and I'm not moving along at the pace of a chapter a week, but I'm moving along.
Good. What chapter are you on?
So I started with chapter 4 today, and the life history is a little daunting because you know, having to do, I don't know, at least 10 segments. Not that I'm 55, but my question is actually because the instructions are to record the facts and your feelings about them.
Yep.
Now, what about this situation? Say there are circumstances when one was a baby and the details of those circumstances one only learns about much later in life. So, for example, a family member had skeletons in their closet, and one day the lights they were operating under come to the light, and this causes a lot of upset and significant changes in life direction for everybody involved.
Right.
Now, should that be included, although there is no conscious memory of the confrontation, but, you know, obviously there must have been a psychological impact.
Well, it might not be that it may not come under those early years. You might put it in the years where discovered, you know, where you were told or where you discovered this daunting thing, and that's when everything changed upon the discovery, wouldn't you say?
Well, no, I mean, at the time, the impact was, you know, a move to another country.
So you could put that in when it happened, but chances are you didn't have much opinion about it if you were only 3.
Right.
Unless you know. I mean, I was 5 years old when my family moved to Venezuela, and I remember as a 5-year-old thinking we were going to live in a hut with a dirt road and have a donkey and a cart.
Mm-hmm.
That was my opinion as a 5-year-old, and that
was
not the case.
My point is around the... recording the feelings. I mean, I don't remember the feelings, but later in therapy I found out that was a very significant time in my life where I kind of, internalized guilt about what was happening. So like the little baby took on all the blame for what was going on. So,
well, you can write it there. You can just write it in terms of, you know, later found in therapy that has, you know, remember feeling guilty. You can put it anywhere. Let me sort of say a general thing about the life story for everyone who's listening since you've come to that point. Chapter 4 in the book is the past holds the clues to the future. And in the now what process, we don't use a resume. I really don't even want to look at people's resumes to start. Like, people think I should know about them, so I should know their resume. I'm like, no. The reason why most people are stuck is because your resume doesn't tell you anything as to what's next other than it has created a business case for, you know, the logical next thing you should do based on your experience. But a life story and what we're talking about in terms of the five sections at 55 years old is you go, there's instructions in the book on how to do it, and it's bullet points. It's not the novel or the screenplay version of your life. It's not editorialized. It's very cut and dry. It's, you know, born in Brooklyn, taken care of by grandparents. I remember loving my grandparents. So we do facts and feelings, and obviously under 3 years old, you're not remembering a lot. You're remembering what you were told later on. But the process puts you through these, you know, age 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, whatever you can recollect in your memory in terms of things that happened and how you felt about them, or things that happened and how they affected you. And then the book guides you through where to look for patterns that help you understand sort of what I call the DNA or the life blueprint, the things that are really wired in you that need to be included for your feeling like you're making a contribution and feeling the most satisfied. So for you, Julian, in terms of the life history, just do the best you can to write it out as you remember it. And then use the 3 lenses, you know, the instructions in the book to look for the golden threads, the patterns, the driving motivators, and the dreams to see what you gather. You know, the whole process is about finding that essential self, you know, finding the things that aren't necessarily reflected in your resume.
Right.
You know, like, for example, I'm working with a gentleman right now who has a lot of experience in operations, corporately speaking, and he really wants to do something else. And not sure what he would do. So we don't look at the resume. We look at his life story. He loves to work. He's a woodworker. He has a workshop in his house. He is really good at taking groups of people and making things happen. So over the course of looking at the life story, we could see there was a theme of him being a builder. You know, built teams, built organizations, built things with his hands. And so that helped him get free from the resume and not be like, well, according to my resume, really the only thing I could do next is work in operations somewhere else, and realize that he could build a team around anything. So what industries, what kind of things does he want to do, and how do we network our way into new opportunities? So that's what it's used for. So
okay.
Back to you. Does that crystallize a new question for you? Like, anything else you want to ask me about that, or do you get where to head?
Yeah. I had another question regarding the suggestions to that process,
sure.
Which is you suggested to show that life history to other people, to, you know, maybe they can see a thread, you know, if one cannot see it oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my
mm-hmm.
question is it better to show it to someone who doesn't know me too well? Because I have a feeling like if I show it to, like, my mom...
Yeah.
Or, yeah, you know, because people that know you well, they have a certain image of you. Is it better
yes.
to show it to someone that doesn't know you that well? I don't know.
I find it best to have someone with a little more distance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because they might be able to see patterns because they're not looking at it in terms of knowing everything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or having an opinion.
Right.
So, yes, yes. You know, not a total stranger, but someone you trust who would take the time with it and absorb patterns. I mean, I've done this, you know, in a room when I train coaches to use this. You know, we'll do it for each other, and people who've never met before are, you know, observing interesting patterns in people's stories, and they usually mean something to people. You know, we're usually right on. Yeah, so let somebody do that. Very
okay.
cool. That would
great.
Be really great. And, you know, and if you get really stuck, I let people send me their life stories and hire me for one session. Usually I have people work with me for 90 days. But if you have a life story analysis you want done, if you get stuck, you can look on my website, laurabrimerforkin.com, and see if you want to do that as well.
That might be really helpful. Thank you.
I know, I know. I do. When I write my books, I really try to remove myself from the process and go, okay, someone's not hiring me. They're buying a $15 book. How do I make them see what I see? You know what I mean? So that's my intent, and I always design them to work. But, you know, we have our own blinders, right? We my blinders are named Laura. Your blinders are named Julian. It always helps sometimes to have an outside eye.
Yeah, it's always easier to see it in other people. Like, I
exactly.
see it in my friends, but myself, it's just like so much information.
Right, right. But good. I'm glad you're on 4, and have you found it valuable so far? Have you had any little breakthroughs of understanding of yourself in 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah, I really want to compliment you to your work, because I've done so much personal growth in my life and in modalities, and I discovered very new things. It was old themes, part of it, but processing in this way was new, and I'm very excited about this.
I'm so glad.
And also, just reading the first pages about, I can't remember what exactly the story was, about how this person found their golden thread. It made me tear up. It was so, like, whoa, just right on.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who's on the call who hasn't looked at your book, I know it's going to be life-changing for me, so thank you.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for being here. And you know where to find me, lbf@intercoach.com.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna take one more from the email, and then we'll go to somebody live on the call next. Let's see, we're about halfway through our time together, so I do want to mention. So I have two websites. So LauraBermanForkin.com is where you can find me for coaching. Now What Coaching is where you can find our authorized facilitators, where you can find our home study kit, which now includes videos, so I can visit you in your house and teach you how to do this book. And also, if you're a coach, right now I'm filling my October training, all done via teleconference like this. Actually, we do it on Zoom so we can hear and see each other. And I have a special coupon to get you some money off on that, so hang tight, and we'll get that to you as the night goes on. All right, so my second question that I get, this is what I get all the time. This is about my TEDx talk, which is, it's called How to Find Your Dream Job Without Looking at Your Resume. God only knows why they named it that, but basically it's 12 minutes of me trying to get across, you know, how to figure out what you want to do with your life. And at one point, I say that if you're someone who's never had a dream, like you can't ever remember wanting to be anything when you grew up or envisioning yourself doing anything, that I say in the talk that that's something we need to, there is a solution to that and we have to talk about it at another time. And I get more email about that. What is it? What is it? You didn't say it. And, you know, I had 12 minutes. I didn't have two TED Talks. I had one. So clearly I have to do something about that. So on my LauraBermanForkin.com website, there is a section right up the front that says free resources. And I wrote an article in there in those free resources about what do you do if you're that person that's never had a dream. So what I want you to hear, if this is you, the person who wrote in the email, that people who never had a dream or have a hard time envisioning things, what I have observed over the years is, just by power of observation and asking questions, is that the people who can't or don't remember it usually had a more difficult childhood than most. You know, maybe they grew up in a scary home where maybe there was alcoholic raging, maybe there was just a lot of anger, maybe there was a sick parent and they never knew if the parent was going to be with you the next day or not. Any circumstance that has made a small child feel unsafe and scared is a scenario where a child can't dream. Okay, so if you're, you know, if you're holding your breath, always worried and not knowing what's going to happen next, how could you have the freedom to imagine and use your imagination and to want and to desire things? So I've just found this pattern over the years that people that never had a dream sometimes come from more difficult backgrounds. So the big question mark is like, well, how do you make that go away? I definitely believe in therapy. But also it's about learning how to get back in touch with what you want. And how do you do that? So just for tonight, a little tip is that I'll often assign my clients what I call a want day, W-A-N-T. So it's a day where you don't get to schedule anything. Nothing. Like, you can't even have the responsibility of having to walk the dog. So maybe you can't do it for a day. Maybe you can only do it for a few hours. But it's a time where you're really trying to be in touch with your gut, with hearing yourself. And the day is, what do I want? And maybe you want Oreos for breakfast. Good, have Oreos for breakfast. What do I want? I want to go outside. What do I want? I don't know. Okay, wait until you do know. So it's trying to get you in touch with feeling. Because when we have trouble figuring out what else we want to do with our lives, we tend to make it an intellectual exercise. And it's not. It's a feeling exercise. It's getting in touch with what feels right, even if it's scary, you know. So it's really hard to sometimes distinguish between scary and exciting, right? And so, you know, I grew up in and around New York City, and I lived in Manhattan for a long time, and I know that, you know, we Manhattanites or East Coasters tend to, like, only breathe from the neck up, you know, we're, like, always in a rush and always on adrenaline and got places to go. So when you slow down and you breathe and you try to feel below your neck, It's about getting back in touch with your whole sensory being, and that's how you bring back the dreaming mechanism, and that's how you bring back being able to discern what you want. It's a feeling thing. It's not a thinking thing. So when I work with people with their very stressed, it's really hard to get to the answer of what you want to do. So I know, you know, some of you listening may, you know, maybe the money's running out, or maybe you don't have enough savings to take a long time to figure out what you want to do, or, you know, you're under duress and you don't know if you should quit. And as real as those scenarios are, it's whatever you can do to try to just calm the nervous system and calm yourself, because it's really only by being able to feel what feels right that you're going to find your way through. So that's to answer that email, which I get many, many, many times. Is like, well, if you're that person who, you know, had a bad childhood and you never dreamt, and how do you get it back? So the dreaming mechanism is getting your whole sensory being back. And, you know, I talked about the want day. Another thing to do is to take on some kind of expression that you used to do. Maybe you used to love to dance. Maybe you used to paint. Maybe you used to, you know, garden and play in the mud. Or maybe you were somebody who knitted or crocheted. Anything that involves your sensation, your feeling, your hands, very sensory. I've assigned people that they have to do that thing every day, and it usually takes about 2 weeks to bring back some kind of ability to feel what you want again. So those are just a couple of tips. And certainly if anyone has any questions about that, they can ask me. But all right, do we have another? Yes, who's speaking?
That was Gregory, but do you want to, I do have questions relating to what you just talked
just
about.
Just said? Okay, yeah, tell me.
So if you have a dream and you've actually achieved the dream, but it hasn't sustained. In other words, you've had, you know, momentary experiences where it actually happens. You know, what do you do? Do you, you know, how do you keep, you know, like, if it's like, this is the best thing I've ever done. This is the most exciting night of my life. I'm going to do this every night. But, you know, you butt up against the reality, and I know you didn't like to say, you know, like, but. I think you were mentioned that at the event. Well, if your experience is such that you're encountering obstacles and you sort of, you know, run out of ideas of how else to manifest the dream on a continual basis,
mm-hmm.
What do you recommend?
Are you talking about show business and performing?
I am. So now, is that something that's not
Yeah, that one
applicable?
Doesn't fit the formula. No, I'm kidding. No, I mean, I'm asking because I know that one and I understand that one. Yeah, so when there's something, when there's a dream that so much of it is out of your control, you know,
yeah.
So you have to be hired to do this dream.
Right.
You have to look for, are there ways to bring that dream more into your control? I know when I did it, if I was having the dry spell, I'd put on a cabaret show.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
well, that's what the dream grew out of. You know?
Right, so I'd be like, okay, screw that. No one's hiring me. I'll hire myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that helped. That felt good.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, show business is like a bad lover. You know, it's like,
yeah.
It's addictive, and you get disrespected all the time, and you keep going back for more. Love me, love me, love me. So whatever you can do to have a healthy relationship with it is what's important, you know. So
well, I think I've gotten there,
that, which is great.
Because I let go of, you know, I let go of needing it so much that it was, you know, kind of casting a, you know, black cloud over everything. But at the same time, I have this gut feeling that, you know, this particular project has not, like, you know, it hasn't seen the light of day that it should see, you know, that keeps kind of gnawing at me.
Well, then, you know, then you take, your choices are always you know, and I say this to my kids, I'm like, you got two choices. You can quit, or you can decide you want it really badly and work for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that goes along with, you know, still having to keep up the other things that you're doing, because, you know,
yes.
You know, we need to be a Renaissance man and woman when we commit to the life of an artist. But the beauty is, you have to look at it like that. Like, you lead the life, you're an artist, whether you're on stage or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're an artist in how you approach even your elder care. You're an artist in the way that you approach
washing the dishes.
Exactly. So
it's a way of being rather than a job.
And also, you know, it's hard when we reach a level of success and we want that to keep going, but you also have to keep in the cadre of truth is that you have succeeded at the dream.
Yes.
We get to have that notch. So, mm-hmm. But I get it. You know, we want to sustain it. And yet, you know, it's saying I live the life of an artist. And do you know who Seth Godin is? Seth Godin is a marketing genius, but he's written many, many books, and he has a terrific little blog. Anybody who's listening, SethGodin.com. And
G-O-D-I-N.
And his blog is always like really short and sweet every day when you get it in your inbox. But he'll often talk about, you know, just deciding to be the best at something, or when's the right time to quit, when's not the right time to quit. And some of his musings and writings are just really, I think, really good fodder for performers, too, even though they're meant for
mm-hmm.
entrepreneurs and business
mm-hmm.
people. But
well, I mean, you are an entrepreneur.
Right. It's really, it's really great. Oh, and he also talks about being an artist, and an artist, you know, not just being someone in the arts, but someone who lives their life creating, you know,
mm-hmm.
who we create where there wasn't something before, and that's artistry.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you take it on as a way of being and a lifestyle, it's not just only when I get the job or I'm on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
a way of life. You know, and it just makes us that much more attractive. You know, whether that goes out there for dating or for being hired in a theater show or for getting a job when you're going out on interviews, when you're walking in as someone who really loves their life, it's very different than when you're walking in as someone who's like, please let this work out because I'm not gonna like myself if it doesn't. That makes sense.
Yes.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
I think we have time for one more question.
Nice. Yeah.
Anyone
Hello?
Else have spoken yet? Yes, I hear a woman. What is your name?
Hi, my name's Hannah.
Hi, Anna.
Hi. Hard to know exactly how to sum things up succinctly. I started working with your book a couple of years ago after I had finished grad school and media arts MFA, and was kind of figuring out what to do next and going to this degree as an artist, but also trying to get the kind of career background that could sustain me. And at that point, I was really wanting something steady. I ended up finding a steady full-time job that's vaguely in the field, but a lot of administrative work, and I've been there 2 years, and it's been good in a lot of ways, but it's also made it really clear that it's not what I want, and it's been really hard to pursue being an artist at the same time as a 40-hour-a-week job, and I'm really, really struggling with it, but I'm in that trap of the having a really hard time giving up the benefits and the steady paycheck, and have a lot of student loans, and it's a nonprofit, and I'm on this public service loan forgiveness, so I'm trying to figure out now, again, how to transition back away to a little bit less job security, but doing more what I want, which comes down to, I think, as far as I got in the book and how I know myself, comes down to creativity and expression, as well as networking and community. Those are the kind of threads I see. I'm trying to figure out how to
make the next step. So that I'm just kind of, I don't know, it's a big open-ended thing, and if you have any
give me those four columns again. I'm just going to call them columns. They're like the grounding points. What were they? Creativity.
I said creativity and community. I feel like I definitely have a pull to connect people and to collaborate and work with people. That's all I said.
I thought there were more.
Just the balance between needing freedom and having a hard time fulfilling my own work as an artist with balancing needing the study, wanting to try to have the study income. That's all kind of
right.
A typical conundrum that I'm sure a lot of people face.
Okay, so what under creativity and community, what kind of things have you done before?
I spent about 15 years working at worker-run co-ops and mostly grocery stores and cafes, and then I volunteered doing community radio. I also was a painter. I went to grad school kind of trying to bring in this thread of journalism and media and art, and have done some teaching. I'm doing adjunct teaching as well as I'm managing a media center at the library right now, which I'm providing resources to people, and it's drawing on those a lot, but the 40-hour-a-week job is just killing me, and the administrative aspects are really making it hard to pursue my own creative work, and I'm just struggling with that balance.
What's your own creative work?
I want to paint. I want to do... I want to have the time to find subjects that I can research from a creative level and get really deep into them and explore and use storytelling and various media to express them. And that's something I was able to start to do in grad school. And I have the luxury of time, and it's just been really hard to even figure out. I'm not doing very much art right now because I've been just doing this day-to-day job.
So when you went to grad school, and you know, what was the dream? What's the dream? What's the thing that you were
hoping
to do? I guess
the idea was that this would give me time to focus on my art and career, and then I would have these credentials to be a professor, and that would be kind of a compromise. And that's something I've done. I did teach when I was in school, and I'm starting to do some adjunct teaching in the fall. I have the credential now, but it's just a really competitive field, and I'm not even sure if that's what is the right thing for me. It's still, you know, but
what's the pure dream, not the compromise dream? What was the ultimate dream when you started out?
I guess I was never entirely clear on that, but I think that I want to just be able to be an artist, and storytelling is important. Audio, I've done a lot of audio storytelling, audio documentary. I want to continue to do that. I want to paint. I want to figure out ways to put those together and to follow through my curiosity and to... I guess the real dream comes to hearing people's stories and helping them express them and find ways to make connections with people.
Okay, so the question that comes up for me that I think might be the homework for you is all these things and all these expressions, what would they be in service to? Like, what would you want to use those for? Beyond your own expression, what do you want to use them in service to? To what?
I want to use them in service to bringing people together and in service to creating, in service to social justice in the world and bringing, making the world a better place by having people understand that they're not alone and that I guess that's another thread that's come through is a commitment to social justice and equity and wanting to figure out how to bring that through to use it in service to that. I'm not exactly sure how to do that.
Okay, well, but that's what has to be what propels you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like what, you know, when you said, I'm a professor, adjunct professor, and be a professor, you know, that's the compromise version. That's not the impact you want to have. There's something you want to impact, and that's what you use your art for. So whether it's a hobby, or you start it as a hobby and it becomes your job, that's what you have to live in service to, and that's a way bigger game than the one you're playing right now.
Yeah. How do I go from the compromise to the true dream?
Well, right now you have a job, which is good. Don't give up your job. I think the professor thing is more of a compromise because it just puts you in the position to be doing art, which is great. And it might get there anyway. But it's like when you have, first of all, always having something bigger than yourself to aim for raises the stakes. And then, so, you know, when you say social justice, what in particular, what issue in particular gets your attention?
I guess I mean, a lot of different things. I care about the immigration crisis right now. I care about the way that people, particularly people of color, are being killed by police. I care about women's rights being eroded. I care about the way the environment's falling apart.
And now all of those can keep all of us awake every night. So, So du jour, you know, pick one. Let's say. And what is your medium? You said you paint.
Yeah, I paint, and I've done audio documentary. That's probably the thing that it's my most professional medium.
Okay, so the hard part is having too many, right? So you have to pick one for now. And, you know, where's that blog? Where's that Instagram? Where's that Facebook page that you're putting out content? And we want that content to catch on, and that's how you build a reputation. And then that's how, you know, someone wants to use your image for a poster,
mm-hmm.
and there's a royalty. You know, so that's how you start by doing it and putting it out there and leveraging it. You know, and even nonprofits pay for their artwork. You know what I'm saying? So, but if even having a job where you can't wait to get home because it's like, tonight I'm going to post that thing. You know what I mean? Like, it gives you the fire to keep going. And then I can't predict what will happen, but I just know from my own experience and from clients that I work with is like, nothing happens until you put yourself out there. And then when you're putting something out there, things get a life of its own. And you can call it, you know, coincidence or luck or whatever, but I don't really believe in that. I do ascribe to the definition of luck being preparation meeting opportunity, and the preparation is you've picked something you care about, you've done a visual or audio expression of it, and you spread it. You know, like when I did my TEDx talk, they're like, okay, I thought in my mind, if this is the last thing I ever do, this 12 minutes is the last thing I could ever say, what do I feel I have to say that no one said or that I feel is what I can leave behind? And that's how I decided which 12 minutes of the years of things that I have to say to pick, right?
Yeah.
So you have to always raise the stakes on yourself, and you're not doing it to create, you know, because you're going to do it right or you're going to pick the thing that can go viral. You do it because it means something to you and because you see something you can affect.
Okay.
And, you know, it's not, sometimes it's about throwing spaghetti on the wall, but in your case, it's not. There's clear things you care about and there's clear things you're good at that you can be in service to. And, you know, don't quit your job. Just start making a commitment that you have to do one thing a day towards the things that you care about, and let's see if it turns into an opportunity to make a career out of it.
Okay, that's a good. I just feel so stuck. I've felt stuck for this whole 2 years almost, and I just, maybe I'm blaming it on the job, but I guess.
Well, it's, you know, it can suck you dry, and you want to just go home and nap. I get it, but you know, if you make a commitment, like I said, with the, you know, going to the gym or keeping promises to yourself, make it small, But it's like, you know, what's it going to be?
Okay.
You know, I'm going to, this is what I'm, this is what I care about right now. I'm going to create
okay.
around this week.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And don't be
yeah,
afraid
so
to
hard
share
to it down.
I know,
yeah.
but that's the plight of the creative mind, is we always have more ideas than we can do stuff with, but. So,
yeah, I've been doing one daily painting a day for almost a year, just a little.
That's fantastic.
That's keeping me going, but I'm ready to go deeper, and I'm just stuck, so I just got to keep going on it, I guess.
In service to what? Just keep that in mind. Make it bigger
okay.
than you.
Okay. Okay,
you know, make
you.
It bigger than you. You know, I can think about my coaching and my speaking as a way to make a living, or I can think about it as, I want the whole world to know these things because their lives will be better. So
okay.
let's see how far I can spread it. And that's the game. When you make it a game, it's just not a failure or a success. It's like I'm going to keep getting better at the game. You know, people never really master golf.
Right.
right? You just keep getting better at the game. You don't master yoga. You just keep getting better at the game. And that's, if we can set up our lives like that, then that's how we can feel like we can get through.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you to all of you who showed up live tonight. This was an exciting
Thanks.
Call. Sometimes it's like pulling teeth, but we had a lot of people sign up, and I know there are people who will be listening to the audio. Oh, I promised for anyone who is coach-centric and thinking of working with me on the training, you want to put in Friends of LBF. If you go to nowacoaching.com, the facilitator's training, and you use the code Friends of LBF for the month of July 2018, in case you're listening to this a long time from now, you will get the early bird price, which already passed for everybody else. And like the rest of you, I told you I'm not here to sell you anything. I want you to get what you want. Just know that at nowwhatcoaching.com we have some free resources on lauraburmanforkane.com. At nowwhatcoaching.com you can keep up with these free calls if you want to come back in a couple months, or you can move to the next level of doing the home study course or picking up a session with me or whatever you want to do, and we have all those authorized facilitators who would be happy to work with you too. But I thank you all for being here. I want you to succeed, so please do, and my email is lbf@intercoach.com if I missed anything you needed to hear. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you,
Laura.
Have a good night.
Thank
my
you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.